What is up, everybody? We are here for another Mojo Sessions. We are joined by Ezra Levine, CEO of The Collectible App, and we've got the Mint Collective. It's the first of its kind sports collectible event coming to Las Vegas, January 28th to the 30th. I'm going. The whole Mojo Break team will be in attendance. We are so stoked, and we're here to talk about that event. Ezra, tell us about the vision behind the Mint Collective.
You got it. Yeah. I mean, look, this is going to be a really fun event for the hobby, right? Now, really what we wanted to do here is we wanted to create an event in light of all the innovation that's happened in the industry over the last, you know, call it 18 months. I always say that, you know, more innovation and more change has really occurred in the hobby over the last 18 months than perhaps the prior 18 years. So we wanted to create this event really just to kind of bring all the big leaders of the hobby together to talk and debate, you know, some of the most relevant topics, to do a card show in a little bit of a different way, right? To kind of foster a greater sense of community, to have more thought leadership, and to bring a little bit of the kind of Vegas sex appeal to it, right? I think this is going to be, you know, a really exciting event that's going to have a lot of sort of similarities to what you would expect out of a show, right? But it's going to have a lot of things that are unique and different and splashy. And again, we're just excited to kind of bring everyone together. It's a real collaboration. Obviously, this was founded in partnership with Collectible, our company, and IMG and Endeavor, who is, you know, sort of a big global powerhouse within sports. It's, you know, the title sponsor is eBay, but really it's not going to be about Collectible. It's not going to be about IMG. It's really about the hobby, right? The mission and the vision behind this is to grow the hobby together.
Definitely. And the show is going to be at the MGM, and you can get tickets at themintcollective.com. So definitely get on those before they sell out, because I know there's some cool stuff. So head on over to that website and check out the events and get your tickets for the Mint Collective. Now, how does this thing differ from the National?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll say this. I mean, the National is the unquestioned, you know, top show in the category, right, in the hobby. I mean, it is the Super Bowl, you know, of the industry. It has been for 40 plus years and probably will always be, right? This is not meant to be competition to the National in any way, shape, and form. In fact, you know, we have sort of deep respect and ties and friendship with all the organizers of the National. You know, this really was sort of a response to the fact that we thought that people wanted more, right? You know, I think when people leave the National, you know, there's so much excitement after the show, right? How great of a time they had, how they love meeting people. You know, I think if there's one critique of the National, especially this past year, was that there wasn't really a chance for thought leadership. There wasn't really a chance for necessarily, you know, education. I know people were kind of crowding out in hotel rooms until the wee hours in the morning, right? There wasn't really that, you know, sort of ability to really kind of get together, kind of chew and debate some of, you know, really, you know, key topics in the hobby. So, yeah, I mean, this is, again, not meant to be a replacement or a substitute for the National. If anything, it's complementary to it. And yeah, I think there is definitely a place for a couple big shows in the hobby's calendar every year.
Absolutely. Now, Ezra, let's take it back to when you got started collecting. Tell us your roots of being a collector.
Yeah, I mean, it all stems from my dad, actually, right? So my dad's been in the hobby for as long as I can remember. And he, you know, I remember when I was a kid, he, you know, he's got his set of hobby buddies, and they would go to the National every year. And it was an ongoing family joke that he was going away with his hobby buddies for 4 or 5 years. You know, so I learned about the hobby through him. Obviously, you know, growing up, I collected cars just like every other kid in America, probably a similar story to a lot of people. Then I, you know, then went to college and high school and all that stuff. And I, you know, I sort of lost touch with it a little bit. Cut to, you know, like when I graduated college, I worked in finance for many years. And then I co-founded a minor league football league, but I had this sort of background of, you know, sort of sports entrepreneurship, you know, meets, you know, kind of financial markets, with an overlay of just knowing and loving the hobby through my father and through kind of doing it as a kid. And so when the opportunity to, you know, to kind of lead Collectible into the fractional ownership chapter, to really combine the best of the hobby with, you know, with the financial markets, I thought it was a great opportunity for me.
So walking the Mint Collective, there's going to be people having cards for sale on display in the marketplace. What are you as a collector particularly looking for your PC?
You know, it's funny. I do a lot of collecting fractionally now, right? I mean, you know, I'm totally biased in saying that, of course, but it really is true. You know, I think one of the things about fractional, which has been, I think, appealing to a lot of people, is that a lot of the pain points associated with collecting, having to get it graded, and, you know, having the physicals and storing and vaulting, right? We kind of alleviate all of those pain points for people. You can buy the best of the best digitally with one, you know, with sort of one click your finger. And again, you can buy the best of the best, own, collect, and invest in the best of the best at price points and sort of allocations that are affordable to you. And so I've really taken that to heart. I mean, we're kind of building a product that I think a lot of people, you know, who work at Collectible and for Collectible really also enjoy, right? So for me, you know, if you look at my PC, I've got, you know, Mantle PSA 52 tops. I've got a LeBron Exquisite, but again, I'm not paying millions of dollars for that, right? I'm paying, you know, what, you know, the $10, you know, sort of per share cost for, right? So that's something that, you know, I love to do. Again, you know, my excitement about this, about the show really is honestly more about the community aspect of it, right? You know, really kind of bring all the best minds in the industry together in one place to, you know, just kind of celebrate, you know, where the hobby has been, where the hobby's going. And really just to kind of chew and debate on some really meaty topics here.
Absolutely. Now tell us back to the Mint Collective, tell us about the signature sessions, because I was very intrigued by seeing Dana White on the list and some of the biggest names in this hobby. Tell us how the users and the people that are at the Mint Collective can experience that.
Yeah. You know, so again, you know, what's really interesting about the hobby is at the cross section of a lot of industries, right? It's at the cross section of kind of traditional sports. Obviously what's happening in the traditional sports world is relevant to the hobby, of course. It's at the intersection, you know, of sort of investing and finance. People are looking at the hobby and collecting as an alternative asset class. It's kind of at the intersection of the speculative sports business. So people are making, you know, the comparisons to fantasy sports and sports gambling and the hobby, right? So we really want to just kind of tie in all three of those verticals where we think the hobby is sort of uniquely, you know, sort of embedded, and bring together thought leaders in all three of those categories to really, you know, and to really talk about it, right? So there's, and we put out, you know, some speaker topics that will be discussed, and, you know, we're getting panelists for, you know, who are real specialists and don't always have the same views, by the way, in some of these topics, sure. Right? It's going to be something where we really kind of curated this to make, you know, a really meaningful conversation about each particular topic. So again, you know, we're really kind of, you know, relying heavily on the experts here, you know, the real, you know, sort of titans of industry to kind of, you know, educate people, to inform people. I think, you know, what we've seen in the hobby is that there are a lot of new people who've come into it over the last 2 years, and that's awesome, right? In so many ways, that's amazing. We want to continue to expand the hobby, whether it's in the breaking business, whether it's fractional, whether it's PCing things. I mean, whether you're an investor or collector, I mean, you could be a lot of things in this hobby, right? But, you know, what we really want to make sure is that people are coming into it and they stay with it. People are coming into it and getting informed, getting educated, and feeling like they've got their place in it, and that they're able to make, you know, friends and community. Obviously, you know, friends and community really is what kind of keeps people sticking around. And again, a perfect case study is my dad. My dad, you know, his hobby buddies that, you know, he are some of his best friends that he met through the hobby for 40 years, right? So it's really that sense of community, that sense of education that we're really hoping that this event sort of creates for people.
Absolutely. Now, there's going to be a marketplace, and there's going to be a place where they're doing the signature sessions. Is that going to be like in an adjacent room, or are they going to be in the same big pavilion? I know the map's on the website, but I was, you know, how do people kind of navigate through all that at the show?
Yeah, it's going to be a big space, right? So, you know, the majority of the event will take place at the MGM. It's a huge cavernous venue, just like a lot of spots in Vegas, right? So it'll be well laid out. And then Saturday night, we're going to transition over to the UFC Apex. Right, their headquarters in Vegas. We're going to do a collector's carnival, and that should be, you know, sort of the real sort of social fun, you know, sort of aspect of it. So we're, again, it'll be a really exciting event, and we're thrilled to be part of it and to help found it.
Yeah, the carnival sounds awesome. I'm definitely interested, and that's piqued my interest, and I want to definitely hear more about that and what kind of festivities you guys got going on.
Yeah. So some of it we've not made public yet, so I'm not going to give away, yeah, you know, sort of a lot of the secrets. But yeah, I mean, it'll be at the UFC Apex Center. It's really an awesome venue. I've had a chance to see it. You know, there's going to be some stuff that obviously is about the UFC, right? So you can picture some games, and there's going to be some UFC fighters there. Dana White's going to be there. It's going to be, you know, it'll be social. There's going to be an open bar and all that stuff. So it's going to be really just a fun, you know, sort of social time at the UFC, which is a really cool venue. And I think it'll be a great capper, you know, on Saturday night after a great day at the marketplace.
And that's the mintcollective.com to get those tickets. Now, how does one get to the carnival? Is there a certain level of package to get entry into the UFC Apex?
Yeah. So I think you have to buy a ticket for that specifically. I think the details are all on the website. So definitely check that out for sure.
Definitely. So, you know, when everything wraps up on Sunday, what will make this a successful show?
Yeah, you know, look, I think, you know, our mission really is to just continue to grow the hobby, right? And to educate people and to foster a sense of community. right? So I think we hope people leave with, hey, look, I learned something. I met some great people and I have a greater appreciation and understanding of collecting. Obviously, you know, part of this also is sort of introducing this new wave of collector who also is perhaps thinking about the hobby more from an investment standpoint, mm-hmm. right? I think there's, you know, sort of a little bit of poo-poo-ness, if you will, about people who are looking at, you know, the hobby as a pure investment. And really what we want to do is we want to make the case that this is, it's neither, right? It's not just right. a hobby and it's not just an investment, right? What's really cool about the hobby is that it's sort of passion meets profits, right? It's, you know, it's an incredible, incredible place where people are very passionate, but there, yeah, sure. There are opportunities to make money and in some cases, you know, do quite well in it, right? So we really want to just kind of make the case that it's both, it's a really special industry that kind of appeals to a lot of different people. And again, our major thing here is fostering a sense of community, bringing the industry together, debating, you know, real sort of key points, and just having another fun event for people to congregate.
Absolutely. And it's definitely a forward thinking event, which I love, you know, bridging the gap between both generations of card collecting, which brings me to my next question is, where do you see the hobby in 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, look, and I think if there's one thing that we can really expect in the next 5 years is change. You know, again, I said at the top of the podcast, but, you know, there's been more change over the last 18 months than I really believe there's been over the last 18 years. I mean, there's, you know, obviously there's big, big money coming into the category. We've seen sizable investments in the category from, you know, from the likes of Blackstone and Amazon and, you know, IMG and Endeavor and, you know, all these big companies that are real global powerhouses are taking notice of our great hobby, of our great community. I think you're going to see a lot of change. Obviously, you know, what's happening with Fanatics, right? That's a big, you know, sort of, you know, overhang on the industry. What's that going to look like, right? I mean, I think there's just so much that is still very much unfolding. I think you're going to see more consolidation, right? I think you're going to see, you know, sort of a lot of M&A activity. I think you're going to see new, you know, amazing entrepreneurial companies like Collectible that, you know, kind of start up and kind of provide new ways for people to transact and to interact, right? So again, I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of change. I mean, one thing that we definitely see on our end, you know, at the high end of the industry, the sort of investment grade, is that, you know, prices at the high end, it seems like, you know, are going up, right? I mean, I you know, I've said it on a couple, you know, a couple shows and podcasts recently. I personally believe that in 2022, you're going to see not one, but multiple eight-figure confirmed sales. I think you're going to see some big, big numbers. And I don't think it's going to be, as crazy as this might sound, I don't think it's going to be that long until we see our first nine-figure sale in the hobby. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got real sort of explosions of prices, explosions of talent coming into the industry. And I also think you're going to see the hobby continue to get more and more mainstream. Right? I mean, I think, you know, and again, you're already seeing it. So I'm not going out a huge limb here. Obviously, you know, when the hobby is going to be featured on Netflix, right? Or when, again, you have, you know, fantasy sports companies getting into the industry, when you have companies like Blackstone investing, you have Fanatics. I mean, I think you've got the rise of digital and physical. There's so much going on that I think the next 5 years are going to bring a real sort of explosion in popularity and just kind of continuing to make the hobby really mainstream and sort of top of the minds for a lot of people.
Where do you think the NFT space is in 5 years compared to the physical space?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that's a really, really great question. I think a lot obviously still has to unfold there. I mean, we're seeing obviously a tremendous amount of interest and demand in it. We've got a lot of great companies who are pouring a lot of resources into the space. My personal base case scenario is that physical and digital have a little bit of a combination, right? That there's, you know, a world in which physical and digital collide. We're already kind of seeing, you know, the digital, you know, sort of nature of physicals already occur. Companies like Collectible, right? We take a physical item and, you know, we create shares out of it and it lives in your, you know, sort of in your digital collectible account. You have other companies who have vaulting, right? So when you put something in a vault, you no longer can touch and see it and access it physically, but you see it, sure, you know, sort of on your phone or on a website. Obviously, you know, you've got companies who are tokenizing cards and all that stuff. And then you have pure sort of digital collectibles in the form of NFTs. Fanatics obviously has leaned, you know, heavily into, you know, into that space as well. So again, you know, my personal opinion on all this is I think NFTs are awesome for the world of collectibles, right? I mean, again, you've had more headlines as it relates to collectibles than over the last year than you probably ever have before. It brings attention and activity to the industry and innovation to the industry. And I think all of that is just positive for the hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you guys have Collectible apps, so you guys, you know, which I have downloaded and I browse and buy quite frequently. What's your average on your analytics? What's your average user age demographically?
So we're seeing the average age is somewhere in the mid to late 30s, right? Okay. On the platform. And you know, what's really exciting for us is the sort of breadth of people who are participating. You know, I think when we started this, we thought it was going to be a young consumer who's sort of digitally native, who kind of is looking at, you know, the fractional space since they can't afford to own things physically at the high end. Mm-hmm. And that, in some cases, that's true. But in a lot of cases, we actually have people who are billionaires who are using the platform and saying, hey, look, instead of investing, you know, 3 to 5 million in one piece, I'd rather kind of spread that 3 to 5 million across 20 pieces and sort of and be more diversified and have sure. it be more liquid and all that stuff. So yeah, it's a really interesting, sort of breadth of people using it. We have users in all 50 states, which is pretty cool, right? So nice. And we're definitely trying to expand internationally as well. Hopefully we can do that in 2022. So, but yeah, the average age is somewhere in like the mid to late 30s.
Well, and that's where an event like the Mint Collective comes into play, is being able to give these guys, you know, that may be on the older side of the demographic, some education, you know, on how to use it. Because, you know, we all know everybody's got an iPhone or an Android and they can access it. It's just kind of maybe understanding how the whole thing works.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. So we'll definitely educate people around collectible, but it's really not supposed to be a collectible, you know, it's not going to be a commercial for collectible, right? It really will be something that we were throwing. Because we really believe in the space, you know, we want to be collaborative and supportive of all different types of companies and ways, you know, of collecting and sort of interacting with a hobby. That's very, very important to us. Obviously, we're a relatively new company in the category. We just really went public about a year plus ago, right? So we're also aware of our place in it, and we want to, you know, just again really help grow the hobby, not, you know, make it so much about collectible.
Sure. Just have nice hospitality and bring the community together. I love that.
That's it.
You guys have some trade nights going on too, right?
We do. Yeah, we do. We do. Yeah. I mean, there definitely will be parts of this that probably look very familiar to people who've gone to shows like this before. So I think Saturday, the marketplace is going to be, sort of very familiar. Obviously you're going to be setting up there too, right? So
yep,
I think there's going to be some amazing vendors. There's going to be some amazing collectors. I'm sure a lot of big deals will go down. I hope there's, you know, one big trade, which happens, which is pressworthy there. And yeah, it's going to be really fun. We're definitely looking forward to it. It's been a big lift for the team, but you know, it's definitely a labor of love. We're excited about this.
Awesome. Awesome. Got a few more questions. You've been, we're grateful to have you on the show today. So we appreciate you. What are your thoughts on Zion Williamson and his cards?
You know, he's an interesting case study, right? I mean, I guess he's the good, the bad, and the ugly about collecting modern
right.
Cards, right? I mean, obviously, you know, there's a lot of hype in it. Again, you know, I'm not a Zion naysayer. I think he's a hell of a talent. But I think there are certain, you know, risks that are obviously embedded in kind of collecting modern athletes, right? And, you know, injury risk is definitely one of them. And obviously Zion, you know, has had his fair share of injuries. You know, it doesn't seem to be at the high end of the industry. Obviously his prices are still elevated. His prices are still not cheap, right? Mm-hmm. So people are still, you know, kind of making a bet that his star power, his appeal and his talent will ultimately win out, right? But yeah, I mean, I think he's just sort of a perfect case study of somebody who came into the league with a tremendous amount of hype, probably an unfair amount of hype for a kid who played what he played 1 year in college, and you know, and the hobby tends to do that. The hobby tends to kind of place its bets early, right? We saw the same thing with Trevor Lawrence, right? I mean, look, he's a rookie, you know, and so guys like that tend to, you know, sort of go through these peaks and valleys of kind of demand and popularity, and ultimately, you know, they find some sort of, you know, sort of fair market value in the end. So again, I think, you know, I think Zion, you're just kind of seeing, you know, some of the good, the bad, and the ugly about, you know, sort of modern, you know, sort of cards through Zion Williamson.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost to the point where it's like his ability doesn't matter. It's like the icon that he is in the hobby. You know what I mean? Yep. So I heard that somebody turned down multiple $1 million offers on the logo man that was pulled. So, I mean, there's people out there that are still willing to pay big money, even though the guy hasn't played this year. So that's what's exciting. It's not necessarily about like a Jason Tatum who may be having a good season. It's about the when he came out, I think it ushered in a lot of people into the hobby.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, it's all about hype, right? It's all about popularity and about hype. And you've got some amazing, you know, even Hall of Famers, right? Mm-hmm. Hall of Famers who are top 50 NBA players of all time. For some reason, the market doesn't give them a lot of credit. I mean, you know, one guy who comes to mind is Dwayne Wade, right? I mean, he had an unbelievable career, but for some reason, you know, the market, you know, doesn't particularly love his cards, or, you know, slap a huge multiple on him relative to his accomplishments, right? So we've seen that over time, but there are certain athletes that seem to sort of transcend how they actually do on the court, you know, what their accomplishments are. There's just this popularity, this hype factor to them that you see in their card prices.
Definitely. Now, what are your favorite teams?
I grew up here in New York, so I'm pretty much down the line for baseball, Yankees, basketball, Knicks, for football, Giants. Let's see, for hockey, Rangers, and for college, the University of Michigan. It's been a long time since I've been proud to, you know, kind of flaunt the fact that I went to Michigan. I'm a huge Michigan football fan. But nice. So those are my teams.
Hey, I'm a Harbaugh coach of the Niners for a little while, so I'm a fan as well, watching on the sideline of the Michigan. But the Knicks, man, I mean, Emmanuel Quickly, I got some talent there. I feel like they're on the cusp for the next couple of years.
Got some talent, yeah. Look, I mean, we've got cap space and we have young talent. Obviously, you know, I think we're definitely a superstar away. You know, we're kind of waiting for RJ Barrett to kind of take that next step. He's obviously shown to be a very serviceable player, but we need him to become a superstar. And if not, then we're going to have to go make some moves. But yeah, we've got draft picks. We've got salary cap room, which is more than we've been able to say in a very long time, for sure.
And you know what? You know, the Zion RJ connection, you know, never know when Zion's a free agent. I mean, he wanted to go there to begin with.
He did. Yeah, I mean, if there's one fan base, I'm obviously biased in saying this, but if there's one fan base who I think, you know, kind of could use a break and, you know, and something to go our way, it's the Knicks. We've been starved. We've missed out on a lot. We missed out on Steph Curry by one pick, right? Mm-hmm. We made some really, you know, sort of boneheaded trades and all that stuff. So, you know, I think the Knicks fan base is absolutely starved for a winner. And I think having Zion here in New York would be, you know, sort of a real spectacle for sure.
Yeah, I mean, basketball seems like it's especially televised, you know, East Coast has more viewers. So, I mean, they're starving for that team to compete with New York. And I like Quickly. I like Barrett. And they've definitely got a lot of talent. Let's switch over to football. So you got to pick one to buy, one to sell, and one to trade between Burrow, Herbert, and Mac Jones.
Ooh, tough one. I'm going to buy Mac Jones. I'll buy Mac Jones. I will, you know, look, he seems to have a huge football IQ. Obviously, he's playing in New England under Belichick. You know, we've seen Belichick, you know, take, you know, quarterbacks to ridiculous levels with Brady, of course. So I wouldn't bet against the Patriots and Belichick. And Mac Jones seems to be a winner. Herbert, you know, Herbert's obviously, you know, here's another guy, right, where the market is just baking in sort of a lot of, you know, sort of possibilities with him. His card prices are already really elevated. I guess I'd probably fade or sell Herbert solely based on the fact that his card prices seem to be, you know, already kind of, you know, sort of reflecting a lot of that hype. And Burrow, you know, he's an interesting case. Obviously, you know, he's got a tremendous amount of potential, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess, you know, he had that injury last season. So maybe there's, I don't know if that makes you more or less injury, you know, sort of prone there. But yeah, so I would definitely buy Jones. I would probably fade Herbert solely as a function of kind of where his pricing is right now. And I think Burrow is an interesting case. I'd probably be more in the buy side with Herbert. I mean, sorry, with Joey B.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the same level. I think Mac Jones is definitely a buy. I mean, we were talking about it on our hype show yesterday. Could you imagine if there was a Buccaneers Patriots Super Bowl? How wild it would be for the hobby.
It'd be perfect. Yeah, I mean, and look, yeah, that would be a prime case of sort of established GOAT right against, you know, sort of an up and comer in card prices.
Yep.
Right? I mean Brady is just as blue chip as they come. Obviously, you know, he won the Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year yesterday too, right? So, you know, he's as blue chip as they come. And, you know, I think Mac Jones has a really bright future. Obviously, he's got a great staff over there in New England as well.
Absolutely. Well, that pretty much does it for the interview. This was a great time with you, and I'm looking forward to meeting you at the Mint Collective.
Absolutely. Can't wait to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. January 28th to 30th. Guys, go to themintcollective.com right now. I mean, there's a list. Every breaker that's, you know, big is going to be there. And you got like Dana White, and you've got, I'm sure all the big influencers are going to be there. So it's going to be a must see for many reasons. If you're into collecting singles, if you're into getting breaks, if you're into learning more, I mean, heck, it's in Vegas. I mean, how could it be a bad time? Anyway,
it's in Vegas. Yeah, you know, you're right. It's Vegas. It's during, I believe it's the NFL championship week, right? So
it is
a time to be in Vegas. It's there. One final point too. We're also running an auction during it, right? So we're running, it'll be the Mint 25 auction.
Yes.
We'll coincide and kind of conclude at the Mint Collective. Without going into specifics too much in terms of what's going to be in the auction, there'll be just 25 lots, right? So it'll be a highly curated auction, just 25 lots. The minimum value of an item that could sort of qualify from the Mint 25 is roughly around $250,000. So it's going to be, it'll be a big auction, you know, kind of small and lot size, but kind of big in prominence. And we're really excited about that as well.
Sounds like that's going to be like a museum basically of what's what, you know, for the collectible industry.
Yep.
That'll be a must see.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So in all those items in the Mint 25 will be on display there as well. So you'll be able to see some really cool stuff there as well.
You're going to have 25 security guards, one for each lot, right?
We will. Yes, for sure. Insurance and everything.
Right. Sounds good. And I know you guys do that right. So for sure. Thanks again for taking some time with us. Course, and we're so stoked to be on the closer to the West Coast for a show and, you know, where we can actually drive and not have to send all of the cards back we break. And hopefully that UPS doesn't, you know, or USPS messes up or UPS doesn't, you know. So it's a lot easier to be closer to the event for us. And we're really looking forward to it. And thanks again for giving us some time, Ezra.
Always.